Okay. So I am Lydia van Driel. Gestae is normally difficult to pronounce. And I represent four institutes in Europe, in Belgium, in England, in France, and in Hungary. I am Hungarian. The outline of my talk is the following. I will show first the classical picture of flux emergence. This will be an observational talk, again. And the classical picture of flux emergence is the fragmented omega loop, as we know it. And then, briefly, I will speak about the main characteristics of active regions. We'll show a detailed multi-wavelength picture of flux emergence. Then we'll speak about asymmetries in active regions, which are related to inclination or tilt of the active region. And I will show controversial observational results. It is not bad sometimes to show different things, because we may get closer to the complex picture nature makes for us. And then I will show signatures of twist in emerging flux tubes, and we'll show some somewhat strange non-omega kind of flux tube geometries which emerge, a flux ball and a U-loop, which will emerge. Okay, and then I will show a active region, a long-term evolution of an active region, which suggests the emergence, long-term emergence of a flux tube, which has been deformed by vortices deeply in the convection zone. So first of all, the classical scenario of flux emergence. How bipolar active regions form. First, we see the appearance of a bipolar bright plage in calcium 2, the H and K line. And almost at the same time, there is an arch filament system in H alpha, which appears above it and connects opposite polarity facular regions. The H alpha arch filaments are ascending. The loop tops are ascending. This is an upper limit for the ascending speed. And material is draining along the legs. And this is again an upper limit for the draining. And the lifetime of the individual arch filaments is about 20 minutes or in the order of. Above the arch filament system in the corona, in extreme ultraviolet and soft X-rays, bright loops appear right above the arch filaments, the H-alpha dark loops. And in the photosphere, there are dark lanes, which are intergranular regions formed parallel to the and underneath the overlying arch filament system with a lifetime of about 10 minutes. Opposite polarities in the photosphere move apart at the beginning of the flux emergence, at the very beginning, the first half hour. It is about a few kilometers per sec, the divergence speed, and later on it gradually decreases. Of course, I want to emphasize that this is a kind of arbitrary speed, because it depends at what part of the flux tube we are, where are we in the omega flux tube geometry. When the top of the flux tube is crossing the photosphere, the divergence speed is very fast, of course, for geometric reason. And when we are getting to the more vertical part of the omega loop, the speed is slowing down. Sunspots form by coalescence of small pores and smaller spots at the periphery of the emerging flux region. The bipolar orientation, and this has been mentioned several times, may be arbitrary initially. There is a great spread around the so-called Joy's law, but in 1 to 4 days, this corrects and becomes the bipolar orientation starts to tilt, and it becomes more or less correct. More or less, of course, there is a large spread around it, as Dana pointed out, and George. And this sequence of events is pictured as the classical omega loop emergence picture. What about the general characteristics of active regions. We have heard a lot about this picture, Joy's law, and George explained the tilt dependence on the flux of the active region and the latitude it emerges, and it is linked to the effect of the Coriolis force. But okay, let's see what kind of range we have active regions. This is the magnetic flux of one polarity. So when you speak about magnetic flux of active regions, you double this, roughly. And so large active regions are in the range of this flux. Normally, when we have a really large active region, we say it is 10 to the 22 Maxwell. We have, or a few times 10 to the 22, they live weeks or even months long. And then there are the smaller active regions with this range. They live for days, weeks, and we are going down to the lowest end of the active region hierarchy. The ephemeral regions are in this range, and they live for hours, and with a mean lifetime of 4.4 hours. And you have seen many times, actually, already this picture, which was created by Karen Harvey in her thesis, and Case Vaughan adapted it for the book with Carol Schreiber. And it just shows that basically the deviation for Joy's law, how randomly active region tilts appear, depends on the active region size, which is of course proportional to the magnetic flux the active region carries. And George mentioned this already, that in the Fisher, Fun and Howard paper, they found that the spread in around Joy's law is latitude independent. So basically, since it is latitude independent, it should be something different. It should be something general in the sun, so it is related to turbulence, highly probably. Now let's see something detailed, okay? Not just the general characteristics. And this is the observation, the thesis published in the thesis of Louis Strauss in 1994. He was an Utrecht student and student of Case Vaughan. And he went to La Palma using the SUP filter, tunable filter, on the Swedish vacuum solar telescope. We have seen images and also the description of the instrument yesterday. And he observed an active region, an emerging active region, which was at the beginning of the observation, 7.5 hour old. And he had an observing sequence for 1.5 hour. So, okay, this observation represents a relatively limited time scale of the active region emergence. He had multi-wavelength observations. Here it is the continuum. This is H alpha. And this is magnetic field. And he also had observations in the iron 557.6 nanometer line, which is insensitive to magnetic field. And on the other hand, it shows, and you will see later, secular dark, secular bright points, which coincide with strong magnetic fields in the photosphere. And from those images, he could construct a flow pattern for the bright fecular points in the active region. This is the positive fecular points, the motion pattern of the positive fecular point, and this is the negative fecular point. We see that there is a counter streaming in the active region of the opposite polarities. He also measured the formation and motion of the opposite polarity spots. This is positive, this is negative, here.
Could you indicate which is the leading polarity?
Okay, this is the leading polarity, the positive, and the following polarity is the negative. And what he saw, that there was, in the motion of the pores, there was a divergence, which was about in this range, it is consistent with the slowing down of the divergence. So it was 7.5 hours old in this active region. And he also found that the leading polarities were moving with about twice the speed of the following polarities backwards. So the divergence was asymmetric. The same asymmetry was found in the counter-streaming bipolar secular bright points. So again, the leader polarities were moving much faster towards the northwest than the following polarities to the southeast. And even more details. These are the images which are taken in the line center of this iron one line, which was insensitive to magnetic field. This is Doppler velocity in the same line, measured in the same line. This is continuum image, and this is magnetic field flux density for the same region. Basically, what we can see in the magnetic field, that there is not one single magnetic inversion line in the active region, though the leading polarities are more or less here, and the following polarities are more or less here. There is a great mixing in the active region of the two polarities. And what do we see in the continuum, and what do we see in the line center? In the line center, there was a series of observations when there these dark lanes appeared, what you see in the middle, and these dark lanes were about 2 megameters long, and at both ends, frequently, specular points, bright specular grains appeared. When they looked at the Doppler speed, the dark lanes were upflows, and the bright, and they did not have considerable magnetic field, but something very weak was there. And on both ends, there were these bright specular grains, which were places of downflow, and they had strong magnetic fields. So what else was this than individual small flux emergence events? But okay, the flux emerged in a very large active region, I mean a large area, but the individual events were very small only. There were this above the long monopolar magnetic regions, these monopolar lanes, there were bright faculae all above, and they showed this streaming what I showed in the former slide. They were moving towards the poles. They represented the magnetic inflow, which was the inflow which was increasing the magnetic field strength of the pore. And when they looked at magnetic flux emergence sites, they found that magnetic flux in these very small events emerged randomly in time. But when they looked at the places of flux emergence in the region, they found that there was a pattern. There was a spatial pattern in the active region. And the spatial pattern could be described with a distance, wavelength, distance of 8 megameters. And since the active region was close to 50 megameter large, there was plenty of room to repeat this strange emergence. So, okay, what they found here showed such complexity of detail which was not described by the simple emergence of an omega loop. So, they created a small model. How could we understand all these details? And they concluded that the emerging flux tube was frayed in two systems. There were parallel, almost vertical, slightly curved sheets, which contained several flux tubes which were floating up successively. And these flux tubes all had a wavy pattern, an undulatory pattern. So one flux tube, while it was emerging, emerged at several places. A bit complicated thing. So why this wavy pattern? First of all, of course, there is the undulatory or Parker instability, which was described long ago. And very probably, something happens indeed. This thing happens to the emerging flux tube. And why is the loop so fragmented? It emerged in several sheets. Rising flux tubes, of course, fragment quickly, as Dana pointed out, unless they are stabilized by twisting the flux tube, showed by Amon and Moreno Inzertis. So wasn't this flux tube twisted? If it was not twisted, it wouldn't have made it all the way to the photosphere. What I find, more reasonable that this fragmentation was likely to occur right under the photosphere, and probably due to the fact that the flux tube can only emerge piece by piece, so basically the undulatory instability. Let's see now on longer time scale how a flux tube is emerging. This is a movie. Okay, let's see it again. It goes so fast. Bipole, a leading spot is moving forward. Look at the snake-like behavior, probably large-scale supergranular motions. And the boundaries are followed. Okay, and when we check, these images are corrected for differential rotation. They are all rotated to the center of the, to the central meridian, so they contain no distortion or projection effect. So what we see that the following polarity is basically staying at the same longitude, while the leading polarity is running forward in the direction of the solar rotation. The other thing we see, that there is an asymmetry in the area the leading and the following spot occupies. The leading spot is much more elongated in the direction of motion, and the magnetic inversion line increasingly becomes asymmetrically placed in the active region. But this is not yet the full story. Look at the full story of this active region, how it evolved. Okay, this is what you have seen already. And now, there is a new bipole which appears and moves apart. And this is how a bipolar sunspot group is forming. It is, okay, let's see it again. It is one of my favorites. Come on. How do I go back? Yes, it is a pleasure. You need passion, don't you? Poor things. Okay, thank you, Dana. So look at it again. How dramatic flux emergence can be. Of course, the ideal movie is much better than this. No, look at the second flux emergence. And the lot of flux is coming up. And what do we see? Okay, the old following part is still here. This is the first bipole which appeared. And then this is the second bipole, and what we see, the following polarity again moves backward, eastward, slightly, while the leading polarity is much faster going forward. And this is the scale of the active region. It is about 105 megameters. So the 100 megameter theoreticians like to show. So, this is not a unique feature. This is something we find statistically in active regions. So what do we find? That the leading spot moves forward much faster than the trailing spot eastward, and the magnetic inversion line is statistically closer to the F spot than to the P spot. And this was noticed by myself and Krzysztof Petrovai, who is in the audience and who is attending this school. And then confirmed by John Nakaudzi and Fernando and myself later. And this was interpreted from the observations before all the simulations confirmed it, that the emerging flux tubes are systematically inclined eastward trailing the rotation. And this was later by many more papers. I just showed the head and the tail. I mean, okay. The other I don't speak about because already George covered it. And there is an east-west asymmetry, which was also found in the active region. It is not in the active regions itself, but it was in the distribution of active regions on the east and the west hemisphere. These are not large active regions, these are the ephemeral regions, and this is Karen Harvey's work. And she found that actually there are 52% of ephemeral regions emerge on the east and 48 on the west hemisphere. Okay, it seems very little, but she concluded that it means that the flux tubes are leaning westward, opposite than what we got from the sunspot motions. So, what is the sunspot inclination to the vertical? We get eastward tilt from the motions, westward from the east-west asymmetry. Maybe when we are seeing the sunspot motions, we are observing inclination of flux tube deeper down in the convection zone. I mean, not very deep, but down the convection zone, the geometry of the flux tube down there defines how it will emerge, the emergence speed. So the consequence of the asymmetry in sunspot motions is coming from a true inclination downward. Then we are observing field line inclination in the photosphere, east-west asymmetries and Howard's work. Probably we are observing something else. And maybe the active region flux tube is indeed has a very complicated shape. We have to keep it in mind. However, also, the initial conditions in the simulations may produce different field line flux tube shape if they are different. There is also twist in the emerging flux tube, and this was the first paper, K.D. Lecca in 96, which analyzed very deeply an emerging active region and found several arguments to show that it was a delta spot, a lot of bipoles emerged, and that they came up with already ready inherent current. The main argument was that currents increase together with the emerging flux, and very similar results were found by Wang and Abramenko recently, by other authors are using H-alpha morphology and proper motions to argue that flux is emerging twisted, and it is more and more in the observational literature that yes, flux is emerging twisted. And the simulations also show, but this will be a slide shown later, that even Louis Strauss' active region was indeed twisted, because the simulations provide amazingly similar pictures what we got from this detailed observation. There are, if the flux tube is even more twisted, we can get helically twisted flux tubes with forming a stitch, as Pevsov and Longkop showed. These were two active regions appearing with a rotation apart, and they argued that the first bipole was due to the emergence of an omega loop, but the second one, a rotation later, came up from the same loop, which had a turn, a stitch on the original omega loop. And if the field is even more twisted, then back in 1991, Tanaka proposed that it can form a knot on the active region, and we get island delta active regions, what Zirin and Liget characterized as they born and die locked together. Something like that was observed in 1992 by Light and co-workers. It was a bipole, but a delta region formed in the following part. And this delta region rotated as it came up and then disappeared with almost no trace. B.C. Lowe interpreted that as the emergence of a full flux ball, which first, the top part crossed the photosphere, this is the top 0.6 radius, and then as it went higher, this is the bottom part which crossed the photosphere, and this is B.C. Lowe's field line geometry. And I would like to point out that this is one single field line you are seeing here. So it is back and back and back. It is like, you know, a ball that a cat is playing with, so completely rounded. It could result of a disconnected knotted flux tube, which went through maybe subsequent relaxation. And now we are at flux emergence, which is not bringing up flux, but it is removing flux from the photosphere. There are two active regions emerging simultaneously, and look at the motion of this spot. Look at this motion. It bumps into the following part of the former active region, and of course the cancellation happens as it rotates out of the off-site. Oh, okay. Thank you. So we interpreted this observation as the emergence of a U-loop. U-loops connect two omega loops under the surface. They are inverse omega loops. Two ends are in the photosphere, but the main bulk of the loop is embedded in still in the subphotospheric layers. It is nice.
Okay.
The mass is a very good thing because the problem with omega loops, which were predicted to exist longer ago, that they have difficulties to emerge because the matter is trapped in their concave part and has to disengage from the plasma. And this process is done through the so-called C-serpent process, which means breaking down the flux tube into small emergencies. Subsequent reconnection is trapping the material and sinking with it. It is a complicated process, but you can read about it in Sprelt, Hank Sprelt's paper from 1987. And this was a U-loop because there were several arguments for it. I will have some reprints of the paper, so anyone is interested in our arguments can see it later. And this is my last example. This is a long-term evolution of an active region, which emerged with reverse polarity. It was a non-Hale active region. And then during four solar rotation, it turned, rotated, and became a Hale active region. Okay, it is a funny thing, and we interpreted this result. It is Lopez Fuentes, Marcelo, and Pascal Demoulin, Cristina Mandrini, and myself. And we interpreted this as a very deformed flux tube, but was it a kink instability we are seeing here? What we can see, the right in these images, the right is visible because this flux tube is rotating. This reveals that, and it is rotating clockwise, so it reveals that the right of this flux tube was negative in this region. But there is the very important point, how, oh, no. Yes, okay, excellent. So, how was the twist in the flux tube? And for that, we performed linear force-free extrapolations matched with the Yoko loops. It was a sigmoidal active region. And what we found was a positive alpha. Okay? Positive alpha. So the twist was positive. And for the kink mode, we need that the right of the flux tube and the twist would be the same sign. This is not the case here, so we suggest that it was absolutely not a kink instability. Where was it deformed. This is what we proposed, was formed. There was a normal omega loop, which was turned by large-scale vortices in the subphotosphere. But, okay, where was it turned? Was it turned in the shallow subphotospheric layers? It cannot be because it had such a long turning time, 4 months it took to turn. Otherwise, it would have turned in 4 days. Isn't it, Dana? So we would see that indeed this flux tube was turned deeply down in the convective zone. And you remember that it was a non-Hale active region, but still the leading spot was very stable and big. It survived 3 rotations. So this suggests that this shape of the flux tube formed very deeply in the convection zone, and the flux tube made its way up with the leading edge already in the wrong direction. So this made this flux tube strong, and I mean the leading spot strong and stable. And there are other observations like this. In November 97, and for 5 months, we observed an active region which came up as a Hale active region and subsequently turned to become a non-Hale active region. So this kind of active regions do exist. They are not abundant, but they are not unique either. So these deep vortices should be taken into account when doing simulations. So what do we find from observations? That the emerging flux tubes are inclined to the vertical, they are twisted, they are distorted, they are frayed and fragmented. What is the physics behind these observations? Of course, this will be the topic of the school. The fragmentation and the latitude-independent dispersion of the tilt, the Joy's law, is very probably top of convection zone physics, but okay, it is your job to define. The flux tubes are inclined to the vertical, these observations, and the inherent twist, where was it created, and the fact that the flux emergences have a clustering tendency is very probably convection zone and Tucker-Kline physics. And of course, there are the other observations that they can be distorted severely, and the U-loop formation, it may be in both layers. Thank you very much.
A few quick questions.
When
you see this reverse polarity from the
non-Hale
to the Hale,
yes.
Do you see with MDI movie, we see this contraction of the activity?
Contraction, no.
In one stage, you have to move together.
Yes.
So did you see that?
Okay, when they come together, when the omega loop, yes, we did see. Actually, it was completely described by this omega loop, which had this kink.
Yeah, MDI movie should be able to see this. Yes. Contraction.
Okay, but it was not yet MDI then.
Okay.
No, this is all Kitt Peak. It was done in 85.
Yeah, there is another case, it's MDI case, which
shows. Okay.
Green.
Yes, yes, for that we could. Yes.
I think one of the things that shows up very nicely in these is the weighted loop. One way you determine if this is a rising emerging flux region is by the red shift at the ends of the loop and the blue shift at the top.
Yeah.
And you have a very nice case of a loop bringing up photospheric material and then it just simply streams out. And I think that the dip in the middle is sometimes there's too much photospheric material and it weights it. And then sometimes at the top of these loops, that was a study that Dean Schoenheim did, you see the loops erupting, which is interesting too, that once they get unweighted, there seems to be something that allows the fluxes to break up. But I think the weight carrying tells us a lot about flux loops.
Are you saying that density is non-uniform over the surface?
That's right. Well, what happens is, you have a loop of photospheric material, which is trapped in these loops that are coming up. And as it rises, it begins to come out the ends of the loop.
Yeah.
And that's why you very clearly see the red shift
at
the ends of the loop, the blue shift at the top.
It has to come down.
Back to the very first observations.
Yes, yes. So this was not surprising at all.
Okay, let's thank Maria again. It's 11 o'clock.